And now, from the penthouse on the 10th floor of the 10 Magazine building in downtown Itaewon, where we see it all so we can report it to you, it's the 10 Magazine Korean Culture Podcast. This is Charles Montgomery, and I welcome you to the 15th 10 Magazine Korea Culture Podcast. I am here with the usual gang of friends.
Hello, it's Paul.
And hello, it's Danny.
And of course, I'm Charles. And today we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to change the format just a tiny bit. And we're going to change the format because we were called into the office, well, on the carpet, really, by Steve Revere, whose personal spirit animal is a gold-encrusted corpse of the last living dodo. Oh, no, you laugh at that, but it's fair for him to have that as his personal spirit animal because his grandfather killed the last dodo. So it's one of those things.
He showed me the skeleton.
It's a terrible, terrible thing. At any rate, so let's start what we've done this week. Paul, have you done anything exciting?
Well, I just have to say thank you to Steve because this week we've been very lucky at the podcast. Steve has finally opened up his triple locked safe, and he's given us all a brand new computer and television to say thanks.
You got a computer and television?
Yeah.
I got a buttload of money.
I just got a television a year ago.
Because we know who's the favorite.
But you know what else we know? It's April Fool's Day, so we're all working for free.
No, we got pizza. Oh, Steve gave us pizza.
Absolutely, to be fair. Steve did take us. We had a conversation about the future of this podcast in which he fired us initially. But if we paid him, we were allowed back in the podcast. And he did take us to, what was it, Hollywood Grill?
Hollywood Grill.
To which I had never been.
Me neither.
Me neither.
Which is a nice, very nice place.
It's hard to find. If you're not, if you don't look up.
Yeah. A common problem in Korea that places on second floors and third floors can be unknown to you until someone tells you about them. At any rate, so we are going to change our format just a little teeny bit or else we're fired. And so basically all we're really doing is we're adding something called headlines, and I think it's an idea that we had had also a very quick sort of look over some of the Korean and international headlines that have interested us over the last 2 weeks. We're also going to talk about Busan, a really excellent city.
And that's for our new segment called Out and About.
Out and About, right. Again, Steve says, but we're still allowed to talk about a little teeny bit of culture if it's far, far late in the podcast when Steve is already asleep with a cigar ash thickly crusted on his vest.
And his monocle out.
And in that case, we're going to talk about something very sad that happened if you live in Korea. We're going to do a tribute to an expat, Mike, what's it?
Mike Hurt.
I can't believe that. We're going to do a tribute to an expat, Mike Hurt, who suffered, unfortunately, a stroke 2 weeks ago and was a strong, strong contributor to the expatosphere in Korea. And was there, that's it?
That's it. Recommendations.
And we will conclude with recommendations. So now, the first time we try to do this, so give us a break. Headlines. And we're going to start with a couple of headlines that Danny gave us, and they're international because that is her outlook. Danny, what do you have?
Well, the first story that I think has probably caught most of our interest outside and inside of Korea, of Seoul specifically, is the horrible massacre of the American soldier in Afghanistan who kind of
flicked a switch.
Yeah. Or lost the switch entirely.
Yes. And who's drinking and who's not. And he went out of his base and ended up killing 16 Afghani villagers. So it was a really sad day for him as a soldier because it was his fourth tour. His family's overseas and kind of counting on him and hoping for his safe return yet again. And something obviously detrimental happened to him after his fourth time over there and just went out and took, you know, his anger and frustration out on the poor civilians of Afghanistan.
To me, and you, new listeners may not know, that Danny is married to a member of the U.S. Armed Services. To me, this seems an argument in some ways, or an incident, that suggests we should just pull back from some things we're doing. That we're putting people in harm's way with no no win on the other side of it.
Well, there's a lot of different facets and a lot of different ways you can go at this argument. And I obviously have a different opinion than many other soldiers' wives or many soldiers. Or
hippies like me.
Right. But I think what it has to do with, and what's sad is this is his fourth tour, or was his fourth tour. You know, he was so proud of his country, and he was so proud of what we were doing over there. And the day before he actually, you know, went a little crazy, he saw one of his good friends, his legs blown off. And then a deployment before that, he had a severe head injury. So obviously, you know, these things culminate and you realize that it's, you know, post-traumatic syndrome and a lot of things that should have been looked at before he was sent on his fourth tour. But, you know, there's the argument we don't have. In the U.S., we didn't have the funds nor the willingness to send as many soldiers as we had normally needed to win this war. So a lot of this has been happening. And this just seems to be, you know, the cusp of the tragedy and the sadness of this war.
Well, two questions, because you mentioned one thing I didn't know and one thing I did know that is interesting to me. He had a head injury and they sent him back?
Well, he had a head injury and then they did all the medical tests and they found that he was fit to serve.
So it's like the NFL and concussions.
I don't know.
Get back out on the field. On that,
but yeah, I don't know how extreme the head injury was, but injury. What is wrong with me today?
It's all that Perrier you've been drinking.
I know, that lemon. And then, but yeah, it's just something sad. I think the saddest part about it is, you know, his family, all their names are trying to be held for their protection. And he could be tried on international, like, terms. So he could be killed.
Well, I think the good news is the U.S. doesn't ever turn people...
There's a lot of editing in this one.
I think the good news, which is also the bad news about the U.S., is we don't turn people over to international tribunals, so that won't happen. But it's just the stress thing is interesting. And the second thing that you said that interested me, because I'm essentially a pacifist. But there just don't seem to be enough...
No.
Well, an angry pacifist. There just don't seem to be enough troops to do what we're trying to do.
There are, but there are not a lot of funds, and there's not a lot of... I mean, this is the longest war that we've had practically ever. And, you know, for us to do something and to put this many troops out there, we don't have the manpower, we don't have the funds. And we don't have the American support behind it.
It just seems to me that we're overextended.
Well, but now we've already established ourselves over there, and now for us to just get up and leave, it's kind of like we're leaving them high and dry. And we've done a lot of good things over there. You know, a lot of, you know, the elections that are still going on, a lot of the villagers have come to know America for, you know, helping them get out of what, you know, they found to be struggling, you know, lifestyles and things like that. So there is a lot of good. It's just an unfortunate accident, especially for this man, for our country, for those villagers.
It's interesting to me, doing good over that argument, because, for instance, when we killed Saddam, and Saddam was a fucking... Oops! When we killed Saddam, and Saddam was obviously a bad man,
we also put him in power.
Well, of course, we do all this crazy stuff over there. And when we got rid of him, we also got rid of the only state in the Middle East that allowed Catholics to exist peacefully. I just think... I mean, my thing about that is... We should just get the hell out. I'm not sure what our mission...
We can talk about this. I mean, there's not enough time in this podcast, but I think there's a catch-22. As one of the world leaders, people look to us for freedom, for democracy, to fight for what we believe in. But then if we go in there and we fight for it, it's like, who the hell do you think you are? And it's just, we're constantly at that struggle. There's a line, and we keep going on both ends. And nobody's going to be happy with us if we remain a main power.
I'll add one more line, and then perhaps we'll leave this so Paul can talk again.
He's the only one not stuttering.
Yeah. I think we're on both sides of that line. I think we, more than the rest of the world now, believe we're fighting for democracy and freedom and this and that. And I think that whoever... And I know we probably radically disagree on presidential candidate. Yeah. Whoever becomes president needs to sit down and I hope get the United States back to be able to talk as a whole about what our goals are
bipartisan, you mean?
Yeah, that would. Oh, don't you swear to me.
I would love to see that. I think that's what people hope for with Obama. And I think when people go into office, they realize how much more there is to it. And a lot of reasons why past presidents, whom you may not be fond of, did what they did and stuck with it. So,
oh, absolutely. And I would add one more thing to that.
Wait, Paul's got his hand up, like a good
boy. Oh, and Paul is going to talk about United States politics.
No, all I want to say is that I think that the United States military needs to take better care of its soldiers.
Yes.
No matter what the funding issue is, no matter what the problem is, there have been, over the past decade, all this talk about soldiers not having the right equipment or the right vehicles and all this business. There have been issues with the British Army as well. And the main thing is, if you're going to send people out there, if you're going to send young men and women to give perhaps their lives for their country and for the freedom of others, then you need to be prepared to give them the help that they need if they suffer from whatever problems they have. And this man, it seems, has obviously suffered from some severe trauma, and yet he did not get the help that he should have had in the first place. And now we find ourselves in a situation where 16 innocent villagers have lost their lives, and perhaps in a different situation, you know, he could have been saved from himself.
Yeah.
And that's the real tragedy of this. No matter what your politics is,
right,
it comes down to the human being and the fact if that human being had been treated better in the first place, we might not be talking about this issue.
I agree.
Fair enough. I think we can all agree on that. Those of you know. Okay, we're recording again, but it doesn't matter because I need to get back to...
And you know what? We need to talk about the next... I need to do the dates for the podcast.
Oh, hang on, then I'll stop this if you're going to rerun. So the other big international news is kind of
sad, funny,
kind of sad, kind of rhythmic. And that's the Coney... You okay?
Yeah, because you know what he's talking about, the video.
I was talking about the other part of the video, but imagine, using your weak imaginations, that we're playing out the entire video. It's the Coney movie, and Jason Russell, who was one of the three people who created the Coney video, snapping. And Paul, explain to us the Coney video.
Well, for anyone who's been hiding under a rock for the past couple of weeks, it's now the most viewed viral video of all time. I think it's had multi-million hits. And it's about the Ugandan war criminal Joseph Kony, who's responsible for the deaths of many innocent people, and also for, I don't know, for coercing children into being part of his army, for creating child soldiers. He's not in Uganda anymore. He's supposedly in somewhere in the surrounding nations in the jungles. But this film, Kony 2012, was about bringing this man to justice. And the organization who made this film, Invisible Children, became quite vocal and became extremely popular as everyone on Facebook and Twitter and all over the place started talking about this campaign. And then people started finding out that there were some... People started to find out that there were some facts that were not mentioned in the video, and that a lot of the money raised by Invisible Children may not have actually been spent on their cause, but was in fact put towards making their flashy music videos.
And I should also say that there is a certain element of white man's burden, if you will, to the Coney video. And if anyone's interested in exploring that, you should go to Rob Aseo's website, who... on Tumblr, I believe, he actually got it exactly right when he compared the Coney video to the music video, Little African Child and Me, by Russell Brand in Get Him to the Greek. And if you don't understand that, please Google that and look it up. So there's that issue. There's the issue about the video. But then, yesterday, basically, Jason Russell went mad.
We should probably stop there, and because the podcast is going to go out on April 1st, so it wasn't necessarily yesterday.
So you would say, no, it wasn't even yesterday, it was March, it was like 3 days ago, wasn't it? Saturday, March 17th. There you go.
And yesterday, as we record this, Jason Russell. And a couple of days ago, as we record this, Jason Russell went mad. And he went mad, unfortunately, for him, in the modern United States, in which people have iPhones.
And everything else. And you should note that this is the director of the movie.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't... Coney doesn't interest me, because I'll be perfectly honest. I figure that sort of child soldiers will work the problem out with guns. There'll be fewer of them, the problem will go away, blah, blah, blah. This is a made-up problem. It's a country I don't care about. It's kids, which I don't care about. And they've got guns, so they will blot each other out.
Have you ever seen, like, Blood Diamond?
No.
Oh, you probably should watch that.
Okay, will do.
It'll break your heart.
So at any rate...
Well, maybe.
At any rate...
from a guy that recommends the most depressing books ever. I don't think so.
Are you still blaming me for drifting house? Drifting house is a
I blame you for everything. My social ineptness is due to your recommendations.
So are any other... I mean, this was just interesting. I'm not sure we have anything brilliant to say about this. Paul, do you have any deep thoughts about this? Or is this just a bizarre concatenation of things?
I'm just saddened by it, to be honest. I think it's very easy to go, ha, 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 look, he was this, you know, the co-head of Invisible Children was found naked and masturbating in the street. But I think there's something terribly wrong here. And I don't know what it is. And maybe it's getting fame too fast, or maybe it's the pressure of people complaining and actually digging into the truth of the video. But there's something obviously that's gone wrong with this man, and that he needs help. And it's a shame for him and his family that he had this breakdown so publicly. So I feel nothing but the deepest sympathy for him. And I really hope he gets better.
I just two thoughts, and then unless Danny has something, we'll go away on this one. One of my thoughts is that we talked about when Jenny Hyun two times ago.
And she popped out.
Yeah, and her cop out was paranoid schizophrenia, and we were talking about walkbacks of insanity. So one walk back is, you know, I'm going to rehab. The second walk back is the fake apology. The third walk back that Jenny Hyun gave us is paranoid schizophrenia. And now we have dehydration.
I don't think that's a walk back. I think that is a code word for being drunk or drugged or doing something.
His family swore, of course... they would. But his family swore that it was none of those things. They claimed dehydration. And then the other thing that I would notice is, well, just go look at that video on TMZ and tell me if you think he may not be sexually confused.
Yeah, but my personal take on this is watching the video is the pressure got to him with being either successful this year or the scandals behind it, whatever it may be. And he started... probably boozing a little too much, probably taking a few too many drugs because now he's got the money and the fame, quote unquote, and that just became too much for him. And then he started going, and that brings off, you know, a different kind of reaction with many people. And I think he did have a nervous breakdown. I think that's what they should say.
Yeah, that would have made much more sense to me, actually. That dehydration thing, that's why I mentioned it. It seemed like a weird way to...
Because no one's going to say he took bad mushrooms. I mean, the way he reacted was...
Well, I've never taken mushrooms, Danny. Explain that.
Neither have I, but I mean, that's what it pretty much... I mean, he looks like he had a nervous breakdown or a meltdown, what have you, and he's naked on the side of the street playing with himself. There's something wrong when a normal human being does something for so long and all of a sudden that's his freak out.
And to be fair, he has a taut, muscular body.
I don't agree with that, but...
Look at me. He has a taut, muscular body. Okay, moving on.
But it's a funny video to watch.
Funny. He amuses you? He is
funny.
Like a clown?
Well, here's what's funny about it is how many cars just drove right by him.
Oh.
Like, really?
And the second video that TMZ has is being taken by some woman who's just laughing hysterically in the background. So it's worth it just for
that's
that.
That's me.
So, okay, moving on. We're going to talk about foreign activists being deported from Jeju. And Paul, background this is about the army base down there,
yes,
Navy
this,
base.
This is about the contentious naval base on Jeju Island that has started construction in recent months. And there have been various protests over the past year or so at Kangjung Village. And in the last couple of weeks, a British woman, Angie Zelter, and a Frenchman, Benjamin Monet, were both arrested and deported from Jeju for trespassing, vandalization. Hold on one second. Who were both arrested for trespassing and were then deported from the island. The police cited that their crimes violated immigration law. and therefore made them subject to deportation. So it's a case of foreigners getting involved in the Jeju protests and causing a little bit of trouble, but I don't know for what gain.
You know, I'm with you on this one. This just seemed, these two foreigners seem stupid to me. It seems like they flew in to do this. And they, at least one of them committed actual violence to property, which, you know, I have two thoughts about that. I'm pretty much of a communist, overthrow the, you know, blah, 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 destroy everything. But this is idiotic. If you come to Korea as a foreigner.
Well, and if your argument is that you're destroying, you know, wonderful, beautiful environments, and then you destroy other people's property.
It's, yeah, it just kind of a, doesn't make any sense. And so to me, these people just came here to get some little notch on their belt as, you know, oh, look, I'm a rebellious person. And so they'll get some credit back in their country. They can put this on their CV of rebellion. And it just makes no sense. This whole thing, there are absolutely serious arguments against that base, but they have nothing to do with how the base is being argued. The base is being argued as a U.S. base. It is not a U.S. base. The base is being attacked by people from France and England. How in the name of God does this affect them?
Well, the interesting thing is that Angie Zelter, the Brit, is a Nobel Peace Prize nominee. Uh-huh. And she's well known for going round and tearing down the fences of U.S. military bases in Britain in the 1980s. She's been arrested more than 100 times in half a dozen countries.
How can you win the Nobel Peace Prize?
No, she hasn't won it.
No, nominated. Anyone can be nominated. That nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize thing is ridiculous. Anyone can be nominated.
Mm. But she's a professional. Yeah. She goes around and she tears down fences. She trespasses. I don't know whether it's for a living. I don't know whether she makes any money out of it, but it seems like she gets some kicks out of it.
Her activist CV must be really
extremely long. Yeah. And of course, the French person at least was not retreating. Oh, last time I made the French joke, you went crazy.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, you did. You said you're going to say that.
Oh, well.
No, it just, this just seems, there are real things to discuss about this, but this kind of thing just seems like creating smoke that will not help a real discussion of what's happening on Jeju.
Maybe they just want to get the publicity, though.
Well, these two do. These two are published. Well, I can't speak for the French activist because, first of all, he spells Benjamin with an extra I. So, apparently some kind of psychotic egotist.
It's Benjamin.
But Angeman Zelter is, as Paul points out, is just a professional, look at me, look at me, look at me. I'm cutting wire.
Well, I don't know what their connection is to Jeju Island, but it seems like they've flown in, they've done their bit, they've been deported. But hey, let's move on to the next protest.
That's a nice job, if you think about it. I'd fly around.
Who supports them, though? I mean, like, who are the donors of this? Who are the hippies that have money that donate these kind of funds?
That's a really interesting question, because as a hippie, maybe not a hippie because they're stinky and horrible, but as someone who's really, really left-wing politically, this kind of thing just seems to me without any kind of value. I don't see what, even if they are being paid for, obviously, because they're flying hither, thither, and freaking yon, but what's the outcome of this kind of thing that's successful? What's the PR? Danny, you're a PR person, as I was. What's the PR advantage?
Well, I mean,
to this?
Like I said, it's maybe just to get more publicity and get the word out, the buzz generated for within their country and those activists within, you know, France and England. But I don't know. I mean, that's all I can say. That or, you know, to start getting more activists, really, worldwide, kind of getting them into this issue.
Yeah, that's a circle jerk to me in a way, though. I just don't
understand. You say that?
I can say that. I've been involved in upwards of 50 of them. No, I just...
Poor Paul doesn't know what it is.
Paul knows what it is, and they do it in what they do. Where he has a soggy biscuit.
Yeah, I didn't go to public school.
The last person has to eat.
I was not at boarding school. I was not involved in that.
Fair enough. Okay. Paul, any last thoughts on that, or do we just let that die?
Let's let that die a terrible death.
Okay, yeah. So, I think this is our last one. This is terrible.
No, this
oh,
is...
Oh, good God, we're going to march a lot.
We've gone on. This is I think we need to slim down and we need to cut out.
Yeah, I will do. Okay, so...
Why don't we just make that our last one? Do we really need...
Do we...
don't need Korean footballing.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Do we really need Shani?
Well, and it would be interesting because I'm going to savage the motherfuckers, but we could wait for the next one on that. because it just came out today.
Yeah,
it just went. Okay, so let's go to Shin Kengsu. Okay, so our last bit of headlines is interesting, particularly to me, because it is that Shin Kengsu has won the Man Asia Literary Prize, and in fact, she has also been long listed on a British. Our last. Good Lord. Our last. God damn it.
That tastes like Bud Light. You're not used to that fine.
Whoa! That crazy alcohol level.
It's at least 3%.
Our last headline is that Shin Kengsuk has won the Man Asia Literary Prize. And this is interesting. Our last headline is that Shin Kengsuk has won the Man Asia Literary Prize. And this is interesting on several levels. First, it's the first major translation literary prize that I'm aware of that a Korean has won. And for the Man Asia Literary Prize, it's also she is also the first woman to win and the first South Korean to win.
Woo!
And this, of course, is for her extremely popular work, Please Look After Mom.
I think you find it's Please Look After Mother.
If you're in England, where every woman is a mother.
Mom.
Well, yeah, it's made up. The English people, you can't please them. If it's not this word, it's that word. They have a word for everything.
Yes, it's everything.
See how that works? So this is, I'm not sure that either of you have much to say about, have a comment on this. Did you, Danny, I don't think you've read it. Yeah, Paul, have you?
I've read bits of it. It's on my pile. It's on my to-do list. I think it's good news. It's good news for South Korea. It's good news for Shin Kengsuk. It's good news for the Man Asia Prize, and I look forward to reading the book.
Yeah, I should say it. That my interest in it is that Please Look After Mother is not my kind of book. Please Look After Mom, whatever you call it. It's an Oprah book. But one of the things that was interesting to me was I woke up. This was last Thursday?
The 15th.
Thursday the 15th it was awarded. And I'm interested in the popularization of Korean literature. And so I woke up at 4:30 a.m. on the Friday after it was awarded on the Thursday night because I couldn't sleep. And I went and checked. One of the things I did is I went to Amazon to see what the rating of her book was.
This is the longest story I've ever heard.
Trust me, I'll share it. Oh, the pace. It's about a book, so Danny doesn't understand.
Was it not fantasy?
Don't worry, somebody dies.
In any case, the short version is this, is that this award is an important thing for two reasons to Koreans. One, for their continued desire to get a Nobel Prize someday. Shin Kengsuk will not be the author who gets a Nobel Prize. She does not write the kind of literature that it will ever get a Nobel Prize. She writes, as I said, Oprah literature. But this continues in the Western world the knowledge of Korean literature. And also, it was just interesting to watch, as I was saying before, Danny went crazy. Yeah. Now she's cruising like boy bands on her phone. That it was interesting just for me to watch. There's some question of, are these awards worth anything? She jumped, her book was at 19,000 on Amazon, and it jumped to like 5,000 in 3 hours. These things, and stayed there for 3 or 4 days. These things, these kinds of awards are important for Korea to win just because they make people think about Korean literature. And Korean literature is a, you know, I believe, a brilliant literature and unknown. And I will stop there because Danny, can you wake Danny up, Paul?
Danny, oh, she's up.
Okay.
I do agree with you. I mean, some of the work is beautiful that we've read. I mean, I will hand you that. I just wish it was a little bit more uplifting. I wish there was a sad story with a happy ending.
Well, Shin Kengsuk is that kind of, is that kind of author. So that is an important thing. Now, let's talk about the last thing, and that is SHINee's new album. Paul, you're a big fan of K-pop. Why don't you tell us a little about
SHINee?
I thought we were leaving that till next
time. We'll see. We may have some boring shit. I may cut this whole thing about Shin Kengsuk.
Well, I was very excited on the day we're recording this. SHINee released their new mini album Sherlock, and I went onto my iPhone. I went onto my Melon player, where I pay a magnificent 5,000 won a month to get free access to as many tunes as I like. Because, dear God, I am a K-pop addict, and I listened on the subway here to the entire mini album of SHINee Sherlock, and it's a piece. a piece of absolute brilliance. It's astonishing the way that they sing, the way that they move you with their emotional resonance. Oh, it's terrible, Charles. I couldn't stand it. I'm sorry. That was as much as I could do. It was horrible.
It is the worst. And I did the same thing because of my dedication to this podcast. I listened to every song. And as of yet, you cannot find videos. Any YouTube video is just the...
Thank goodness.
And, oh my God, it is beyond horrible. The promotional material was somewhere between softcore gay pornography and hippies in a heap. The rapping is unbelievably horrible. One of the songs is some kind of, I don't know, concept song. There are concept albums, but Shiny or Shinny... How is it?
Shiny.
Okay, yeah, because I've been reading the English. Is some kind of concept song. It's the and this is from their website. Is the definitive edition of the so-called hybrid remix, which mixes two independent songs into a new song. It will present a unique charm by making one feel like watching a musical and reveal the distinctive music color of Shiny, a contemporary band who has been recognized for their fresh and experimental music and performances.
Sounds like something they stole from the Glee, like, promotional material.
It is unbelievably bad on... Oh, here's what I'm going to say. I am not a fan, and Paul, you may have some other recommendation. In general, I am not a fan of K-pop, but this set a new low.
I'm just very upset that there was no reference to Arthur Conan Doyle. I was expecting at least a Moriarty, a Dr. Watson, but in Shiny Sherlock Mini Art album, there was none of that. And for that, they get 0 out of 10.
It's all a bad, except for the last track, which is a terrible ballad. It's all a bad Michael Jackson ripoff. It just sounds like outtakes of outtakes of outtakes of outtakes of outtakes from Less Than Thriller.
No, that's unfair, Charles, because I think there's also a bad Lady Gaga ripoff in there as well.
Oh, I'm not fair to this band. At any rate, this is what I'm going to say is if you're interested in K-pop or if you want to be interested in K-pop, absolutely abhor this. Go see Big Bang's Bad Boy. Big Bang is a band. Paul is staring at me as though I've just... lost all sphincter control in the middle of this room.
I've actually watched this video on a U.S. blogger site. So that's how I know about this band.
With Shiny or...
Big Bang.
Big Bang.
Yeah. Big Bang is infinitely superior to this. The songwriting isn't... Again, it's not my music. Songwriting's better. The videos are better. Paul, yeah, so you're having some kind of anaphylactic shock reaction to what I just said.
Go and listen to Ali. If you want to listen to any K-pop star at the moment, Ali. She is Korea's Beyoncé.
A-L-I.
No, we're talking about boy bands here.
Either way, how do you spell Ali? I mean, this way, A-L-I.
Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, A-L-I.
Okay. A-L-I, okay.
Who's your boy band, Paul?
Who's my boy band? G-O-D. That's old school.
Okay. Older than perhaps even I am. At any rate, I think we're all agreed... that this is the absolute... This represents everything loathsome, criminally economic, and prepackaged about K-pop.
Available in all music stores now.
iTunes! According to their producer, it's number... One of their songs is number 8 in iTunes right now. Which only proves the ability of the Korean netizen to distort anything.
Yes.
Paul, I feel you need to say something more.
I think you've said enough.
No, I've said enough, Charles. I'm just depressed. I listened to the whole album on the way here. Why do you think I've been so silent?
I did too. It was absolutely horrible. Absolutely god-awful.